Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Percy Jackson Son of Poseidon podcast. This is going to be the part one review of book two, The Sea of Monsters. So when I first read these books, I remember loving The Sea of Monsters as like my favorite of the Percy Jackson books. So this time I was kind of hoping to look at it a little bit differently and try and get a different perspective on it and see if it still is my favorite of the books. So in this part one review, we're just going to review the first 10 chapters of the book. And then part two will be the last 10 chapters. And then part three will be an overview of the book as a whole. So the book opens up with Percy having these bad dreams about Grover being in trouble. And, you know, Grover's running away from this monster and everything. And we learn that Percy has been living with his mom for the entire school year. And then on the last day of school, Percy wants to go to Camp Half-Blood, and his mom tells him that he can't because Chiron told her that it's not safe for him to come. And then we meet Percy's new friend, Tyson, who is this 6'3" kid who comes off as slow or dim-witted. And he reminds me of Lenny Smalls from the book of Mice and Men, because he kind of comes off as this kind of gentle giant goof, and I really like Tyson as a character. I think he's really sweet with Percy and how they relate to each other and how Percy takes care of him. And then so at school, Percy and Tyson are playing dodgeball and they're attacked in gym class by 6 giant cannibals called Lastragonians. And they start attacking Percy with like these firebombs and stuff. But Tyson is able to catch them without burning his hands. And that's kind of when you start to learn something is different about Tyson. And then after they defeat the giants, Annabeth shows up out of nowhere. She's been wearing her invisible cap. And so she takes Percy and Tyson to Camp Half-Blood because she has been having bad dreams about the camp. And so the three of them hop in a cab, run by the Gray Sisters, 3 old women that share one eye, but not to be confused with the Fates. The Gray Sisters tell Percy that he's searching for a location, and they give him 4 numbers that at the time he doesn't understand what to do with, but we learn that they're actually coordinates. And so it's kind of a fun scene that reminds me of the scene in Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, where Harry's like taking the night bus and they're driving around crazy and everything. And, you know, the Gray Sisters are just kind of fun characters and kind of just add to the world building, which I really like. Because they pay the Gray Sisters in drachmas, the golden Greek coins. So that's kind of, it's just a fun scene, I think, which I really do enjoy. And so when they get to Camp Half-Blood, they see that the camp is under attack and campers are fighting near Thalia's tree. And there's these mechanical fire bulls that they're all battling. So Annabeth invites Tyson into the camp borders. He has to be invited in, which is another kind of hint that he's different. And so Tyson is able to fight off the bulls without getting burned again. And Percy initially thinks that Tyson's dead, but it's revealed that that Tyson is actually a baby Cyclops. And that Cyclops are fireproof. And they're very strong and they're mechanically inclined. They work the forges. And so that's the big reveal, is that Tyson is a Cyclops. And that's why he was able to fight off the Lastragonians and the Mechanical Bulls. And that's why he needed to be invited in, because technically he is a monster. And then at Camp Half-Blood, Percy and Annabeth meet up briefly with Chiron, only to find out that Chiron has been kicked out of the camp and replaced with Tantalus, who is like kind of a more grumpy or older version of Dionysus. And this kind of reminds me again of Harry Potter when they, I think it's in the second movie, they remove Dumbledore from Hogwarts also. So there's a lot of definitely similarities in here with that. And so we learn that the magic in Thalia's tree that protects the camp has been weakening, and that's why they've been under attack, and that the gods have blamed Chiron, and that's why Chiron has to leave. So this is where we find out that Poseidon has claimed Tyson as a son, because that's how Cyclopses are made, is between Poseidon and like nymphs and stuff. And so that means Tyson is technically Percy's half-brother, so Percy no longer has the cabin all to himself. He has a roommate in his cabin now. And so it's kind of a big reveal that kind of shocks Percy, definitely, because a lot of the campers start picking on him for having a monster as a brother. And then the new camp activities director, Tantalus, he greenlights a chariot race between the cabins. And then Percy and Annabeth have some sort of falling out because I think of Tyson and everything. And so then Percy and then during the chariot race, the campers on their chariots are then attacked by Stymphalian birds, which I believe are the birds that Hercules fought during his trials. And Percy and Annabeth manage to scare them off with loud music and kind of just outsmart them a little bit. But Clarice, the daughter of Ares that we met in the first book, she becomes the chariot victor. While Annabeth, Percy, and Tyson are punished because Tantalus thinks that they had something to do with the Stymphalian bird's attack. So Percy then receives an empathic link between him and Grover because Percy's been having these dreams about Grover. So Grover then tells Percy that he has found the Golden Fleece and that he's been captured by the Cyclops Polyphemus in the Sea of Monsters. So then Percy is then visited by the god Hermes, who would be the god, the father of Luke. And so Hermes encourages Percy to go on this quest, even though the quest was given to Clarice and her cabin. Hermes tells Percy to go on the quest anyway, and he gives Percy a thermos that contains the four winds, as well as these monster-shaped vitamins that'll do magic things that he needs them to do at the time or something. And so it's kind of an interesting scene that we get to finally meet Hermes the god, and then he has his Caduceus staff, and it's got the snakes on it that actually talk to each other, which is kind of fun. The snakes interacting and everything, and Hermes kind of comes off as this, like, interesting god that is very different from the other gods that we've met. You know, he definitely has a little bit more of kind of like an energy about him, and he's really kind of like this, like, business savvy. He's like running the shipping enterprise and stuff, and, you know, he's got these phone calls he's always putting on hold, and he just kind of comes off as this, it's a very different take on the gods that we have seen. And so I like the introduction of Hermes. And of course, one of the reasons Hermes wants to set Percy out is because he wants Percy to help save his son Luke in a way. And so it's a really cool scene. So then after Hermes leaves, Percy then tells Annabeth and Tyson about what Hermes told them and all about the stuff with Grover. And so then Annabeth convinces Percy to go on the quest despite the risk of them being kicked out of Camp Half-Blood if they leave. But as Annabeth says, if they don't retrieve the Golden Fleece, then there is no Camp Half-Blood to return to anyway. And then if they do return with the Golden Fleece, most likely it'll be accepted. So Annabeth reveals that the Golden Fleece can cure Talia's tree and protect the camp. And so then Percy goes to the water and he asks Poseidon for help. And Poseidon sends them a hippocampi. And those in hippocampus are fish-tailed seahorses, like body of a horse and tail of a fish creatures. And so the trio hops on these hippocampi and rides them across the water to this ship, this cruise ship out in the water called the Princess Andromeda. And so it's a really cool scene. I like introducing these more magical Greek mythological creatures into the stories. And it seems like a great fit for Percy because of his relationship with horses and also with the water. And so it seems like the hippocampi would be like a perfect animal for Percy to ride. So it's a really fun scene. It's very brief, though. And then they get on board the ship, and they soon find out that Luke is also on board the ship with his crew of henchmen. And then they're captured by Luke, and so he reveals that Luke is actually resurrecting Kronos in a box, and that with every new supporter that he gets to his cause, a new piece of Kronos forms in the box. But then we learn eventually that they need the Golden Fleece to completely reform all the pieces together to bring back Kronos. So the trio then escape the ship by jumping off the ship in a lifeboat, and then they use the thermos to steer the lifeboat, and then the trio make their way to Virginia Beach somehow, and they go on land, and Annabeth leads them to this old shelter that she, Luke, and Thalia used when they were runaways all those years ago. And then a magic donut shop appears in the woods, and it's revealed that these monster donut shops are actually run by the Hydra, and that's when you cut the head off a Hydra, a new one springs up in place. So then they have to fight this seven-headed Hydra monster out in the woods, which just kind of comes out of nowhere. And Percy cuts off one of the heads, but two more grows, and so he has to remember how to the legend of the Hydra and how you actually defeat it. But then Percy leads it into the water, and that's actually when they run into Clarice, who was on a warboat, and Clarice launches some cannons to then destroy the Hydra, and then she rescues Percy, Annabeth, and Tyson, and the trio board Clarice's boat and sail off to the Sea of Monsters. And so that's the first half of the book. There's actually quite a lot of stuff that happens throughout. I like the introduction chapters that kind of bring us back into Percy's world. We start off with his mom. You know, again, very much like Harry Potter, where we always start off with him and the Dursleys. You know, we start off with Percy and his mom. We get introduced to Tyson. And then, of course, Percy's attacked at school again. So it hits a lot of the same kind of beats from the first book. But then we get to Camp Half-Blood a lot quicker. And I do like that Annabeth has been sort of seeking out Percy. And we learn that Annabeth had also been living with her family and not at Camp Half-Blood for the school year as well, until she started getting the dreams. And then Percy was getting dreams with Grover, which were actually an empathetic link, because Grover is a satyr, he can do that. But I think that they mentioned it's kind of very rare. So I really like all that setup. Again, I like the Gray Sisters that we get in the crazy taxi drive. That's a lot of fun. I really like the hippocampi, and that's a lot of fun as well. Just sort of expanding this world building of, I'm not really sure if there's a term for the Percy Jackson world, the Percyverse, I don't know. I mean, it's basically just, you know, a world where the Greek mythologies are real. But I don't know if there's an actual term for that type of verse. But I do like the world building that we get in this. We get a new camp activities director in Tantalus, who's terrible. I hate him. And we get a little bit more of that sort of antagonistic friendship between Percy and Annabeth, where she's holding back and she doesn't want to say why she has a thing against Tyson. We do learn eventually, and there's a lot of hints dropped that why she would be against Tyson. We learn eventually that it's because Cyclops is the reason that Talia is dead, because there was a Cyclops chasing Talia, Luke, and Annabeth into Camp Half-Blood. And that's why she hates Cyclops. She blames them for Thalia's death. But obviously Tyson is a young Cyclops who is, you know, he's a regenerate giant. He doesn't know that, you know, he understands he's a Cyclops, but he doesn't really know what that means in sort of the general context of Greek mythology and how terrible they are and everything, because that's not who he is in his nature. So it's part of their journey as Annabeth learns to sort of accept Tyson as kind of a friend almost, but at least, at the very least, as Percy's half-brother, and that she has to put the fact that he's a Cyclops aside, because he can prove to be useful. His strength and his fire-proof ability and knowing how to mechanics works and everything, engines, and in the book we learn that Tyson really kind of bonds with the Hephaestus cabin, the children of Hephaestus, because that's what they do. They're blacksmiths and everything, and that's where Tyson sort of feels like he fits in a bit. So I really like the sort of relationships that we get between Percy, Annabeth, and Tyson. In the first book, we had Percy, Annabeth, and Grover, but of course in this book, Grover is gone, And so we get a new trio. Tyson replaces Grover. And I really like that sort of dynamic that they have. And then we get a lot more of Clarice in this book, because not only is she still antagonistic towards Percy, and even more so after Percy fought Ares at the end of the last book, but also she is really eager to prove herself as a hero as well, and that's why she really wants this quest and takes on this quest for the Sea of Monsters. And so I really like the first half of the book. It really kind of goes by very fast, and I like the monsters that we fight in here, and I like meeting Hermes, the messenger god, and that he's got like this Federal Express type of shipping business going on and everything, and that he offers aid to Percy. A lot of Percy is luck coming from aid from gods and his friends as well. So I really like this book. Definitely feels in continuity with the first book. Feels definitely very much a continuation, a lot of the same beats. And then in the second half of the book is where we're going to kind of get a lot more adventure type stuff. So this first half is really just kind of building up those relationships and getting caught up with the journey that we need to go on of getting to the Golden Fleece. And then also Luke is also on his own mission to the Golden Fleece. And then Clarice is on the mission to the Golden Fleece. And so we have these sort of three competing. And then we'll see if Percy and the trio end up teaming up with Clarice or not. And then also, not only do they need to find the Golden Fleece, but they also need to rescue Grover, because Grover has, in these dreams that Percy's been getting, Grover was captured by Polyphemus, but he is dressed himself up in a wedding dress and disguised himself, and Polyphemus has a bad one eye. He thinks that Grover is going to be his bride, and so that's what's been prolonging Grover. And Grover just hopes that Percy can get to him in time before Polyphemus finds out that he's not a female Cyclops, that he's actually a satyr and he'll eat him. So there's also a little bit of a timeline, deadline there too as well. So there's a lot of good stuff in this first half, and then I really think the last half is going to be great. I will say though that this first half of the book, I remembered this being my favorite book. I will say the first half of this book is kind of not as good as the first half of The Lightning Thief. And I think maybe part of that is that first half of the book was everything was new to us. And that was exciting. And in this, they definitely introduced some new things, but I don't think we spent enough time. This is the shortest of the five books anyway, so this book definitely feels a little bit rushed in some places. And that's where I think it kind of is a little bit weak. But I'm really looking forward to finishing the book and the second half. So that's it for my review of this first half of Percy Jackson and the Olympians, The Sea of Monsters. Stay tuned for part two, where I review the second half of the book. And I have to do these in parts, otherwise this would be an hour long or more podcast, because I really do enjoy talking and discussing books. So if you have any comments or thoughts about these books that you want to discuss, please share them with me. So thank you all for listening, and until next time, stay tuned to the Percy Jack Son of Poseidon podcast. Thank you. Bye.